Janine.
Hi.
Hello, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm recovering. We're both recovering.
I know.
We're in recovery.
I have, I've gotten like 1% better every day. So in about 6 months, I think I'm going to be great.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Probably coronavirus.
I mean, I imagine.
I mean.
Well, this is PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm here today with the... Why don't I ever think of an adjective ahead of time when I drive over? This literally happens with every episode and every person that's on the show. I always go into the sentence like I've got it.
Yeah.
Like I'm always like the, and then like the Rolodex of adjectives are like, no, you can't say effervescent again.
The tie-dyed
Janine Gagliardi. Yeah. How are you?
I'm okay.
You don't seem ill.
Winter doldrums. I'm getting out of it. Today is day two, I think, of being okay.
Fantastic.
We're going to be okay. We're almost out of January.
Yeah.
Horrible, horrible month.
I know, and it's so long.
It's the Monday of months.
It really is.
It really is.
In so many ways.
It's just the worst. And my birthday's in this month, and I still hate it.
What day's your birthday?
The 27th.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said, like something like, rang a bell.
Doubtful.
I feel like you're lying, but okay. There's so much to do. So, did I forget how to do this?
I thought you were going to start singing Smash Mouth All Star. I was like,
hey, no.
So much to do, so much to say. Somebody. I'm done.
Janine, do you want to talk about some news?
Sure.
Gosh, I'm so excited.
Impeachment, am I right?
No.
Day nine.
We don't talk about real things on this show.
Oh, all right. Fine.
We will talk about the impeachment of Mayor McCheese, though. Because that son of a bitch has been riding high in the hog for too long. So, in a move that isn't really that shocking... Mm. The Disney company has decided to rename 20th Century Fox and Fox Searchlight Pictures. 20th Century right. Fox will now be called 20th Century Studios. Mm-hmm. And Fox Searchlight is going to be called right? Searchlight Pictures.
Yeah. Which is cool. Like, good for them.
Yeah. Some people were like, oh, no, you can't throw away film history. But it's like, if you're Disney, you don't want to in any way be associated with Fox News.
Right.
I mean, I think that's basically it.
I feel like you're like, I mean, lately, because of how much they own, the news is just Disney news.
Yes.
Like any entertainment news, like new from Disney.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah, I think it's cool.
I hope they don't go back.
And I like Searchlight. I like what they do. I like their stuff.
Oh, Searchlight's good.
Searchlight's really cool. They produce a lot of really good things.
Later on in the trailer corner, we're going to talk about Downhill, and that's going to be the first movie with the logo of Searchlight Pictures.
Now, other than removing the Fox, have they changed the logo significantly or just the same?
I don't know what it's going to look like.
Okay.
But
I always thought the Searchlight, well, I guess it was. The Searchlight
right.
was because like the 20th Century Fox logo has the searchlights next to it.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, it is. Right. So it is. It was just like, this is the name of our indie brand. Version. Like, this is just their indie. Okay.
This is our small budget house under our umbrella. But now, I mean, I don't know what those labels even mean anymore, because when Disney bought Fox, they axed a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Searchlight is basically just an IP now. It's just a brand.
All right.
I don't know if there's anyone there who was there.
Mm.
But my point is, if you want to go forward, everything forward is fine, but don't go back. Don't go like, I don't want Disney to go on Disney Plus and like take Fox movies and change the logos.
You think they would?
I don't know. I mean, they don't have a problem with like changing, putting McClunky in Star Wars and keeping us from the classic fucking Song of the South.
Oh, God. I don't really care if they change the logo too much.
I don't want to like watch the original Star Wars and it's like not right. It's not real.
What do you mean?
That it just says 20th Century Studios.
Oh, is it? I didn't even realize Star Wars was 20th Century Fox.
Well, it was released by 20th Century Fox.
Oh.
Remember, it didn't.
I just remember the Lucas film coming up. Oh, now I do.
A long time ago.
I waited that last part. They got me. Yeah, I remember now.
Okay, good. Anyway, so...
I just wish your fingers were a little closer to my face when you were doing that.
I'm not sick anymore. By the way, all week people have been hating me at my job. And I'm like, you know what? Hate capitalism because I can't take a week off. So blame capitalism. Mm-hmm. Okay? I'm sorry that I have to come to work sick.
And I'm sorry that I'm afraid to wash my hands.
I'm sorry. Do you know that...
And I keep using all of your cups. I'm sorry.
Did you ever hear the episode of My Favorite Murder where they told the story of Typhoid Mary?
Yeah, yeah.
She just refused to wash her hands.
She fucking refused.
I love
she
it.
She refused.
I mean, it's horrible, but just the fucking...
She refused.
Just the Irish stubbornness of, mm-mm. I'm not going to wash my hands.
I'm
going to continue cooking
I'm
things.
I'm fine. You see me? I'm doing great. Everybody else is dead. Who cares?
Yeah.
Typhoid Mary. They put her on an island.
Yeah.
Just put her away.
Because that bitch would not wash her hands.
She would not wash her hands.
God, I love commitment like
an
that.
Asymptomatic carrier of typhoid. Incredible. Incredible woman. What a woman.
I know. Mount Rushmore.
Oh, my God.
So, Tina Fey is making a movie out of the Mean Girls musical.
Wait. The musical Mean Girls?
Yes.
From the stage that we love for years?
Right. It was on the screen.
No. It was based on a movie?
Yes.
You know, this is...
It's what they call pulling a hairspray.
This is wild. I don't know. I don't know that it is actually going to work as a movie, but we'll see, I guess.
Have you seen the musical?
I haven't seen the musical.
My brother saw it, and he said it was very good.
Yeah.
So, and he also liked the updating, like, the way that they use, like, Snapchat. And,
okay.
Like, instead of a burn book, it's more, like, some newfangled way that they... Mm. Get out all that vitriol. So,
is it gonna lose? I mean, I guess we have to see the stage version to see if it lost its bite, you know?
I don't know. I imagine that. See, I don't know anything. I haven't seen the stage musical, so it's hard to figure out how the movie will be. But she's behind it.
Yeah.
And her husband, Robert Carlock?
Jeff Richmond is her husband.
I was thinking of the producer
Robert Carlock is the producer.
Jeff Richmond, he did music.
Yeah.
So it's a family affair.
Yeah.
And she was also like the mind behind the original movie.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. She said that with Mean Girls 2, she's like, if I'd known they were just going to go ahead and do it, I would have just written it like rather than have that occur.
Yeah. You know, I forgot that Mean Girls 2 was a thing until I was Googling it today.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm sure it'll be fine.
Do we get a Lindsay Lohan cameo?
Oof.
Does she play the Tina Fey role of the teacher?
No. I don't think she has that kind of, I don't think she's pulled
range?
Enough together to be doing that stuff. Nah.
Have you not seen Liz and Dick?
I have seen Liz and Dick. Your brother and I watched it over a very cheap bottle of White Zinfandel.
It's the only way to enjoy it.
Oh my God. Didn't even laugh for most of it, which is really bad.
That's sad when you want to enjoy something for being bad and it's just boring.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess without having seen it, we can't really judge. But I don't know. I feel like tonally musicals are always kind of like peppier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so maybe it'll have more of a Legally Blonde feel to it than
maybe.
Mean Girls feel. I don't know. We'll see.
It's interesting because I feel like Mean Girls has not gone away in terms of being...
Like culturally relevant?
Yeah.
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 I agree with you.
It's still memeable. It's still something that young people now see.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you this story? This is the story of me being a racist. The most racist I think I've ever been, that's not true, but the most racist I've been as an adult, a mature adult, happened relating to Mean Girls. I was working at a place, and around the corner from the place was a little coffee shop that was run by, I don't know what these ladies and gentlemen were, but their first language was Spanish. Mm-hmm. Okay. And they spoke English, but it was a little bit broken. Mm-hmm. So I would go there every day and be like, hey, blah, blah, blah. And like, we were friendly and I'd buy coffee for them. And one day I was wearing a Mean Girls t-shirt. Uh-huh. And the guy was like, cool, Mean Girls. Mm-hmm. And I was shocked. Mm-hmm. And that was it. That was my racism.
Because like,
I was like, why can't he know? Like, I was shocked. And then I was like, well, why am I shocked? Like, he can't know Mean Girls? Like, what do I think his life is?
He just watches Telemundo.
Yeah, like, what? It was just like the stupidest racism I've ever had. Like,
what? You know this
movie's over 10
Mean
years
Girls
old.
Too?
Yeah, I know. I was so like, you know my hipster t-shirt reference. Anyway, so that was my racism.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Look.
I'm sorry you had to go through that.
Thank you so much. Anyway, Mean Girls is becoming a movie musical.
I'm just glad you came out on top in this scenario.
Anyway, so The Good Place came to an end.
Yeah, I heard. I haven't followed this season at all. But, I mean, I'm a fan of the show. Like, I've watched every other season. So, I think I'll just probably binge this season once it's available to binge.
I think it's worthy of a binge.
I've been reading great things about... Have you seen it?
Yes.
Okay. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm kind of torn by it.
Okay.
I feel like it's overly long. It did not need to be as long as it was.
Because it was, two episodes, right?
It was like 90 minutes kind of altogether.
Like without commercials. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It felt more like an epilogue. It felt like it ended the episode before and this was just more.
I feel like a lot of series do that though. Where like the second to last episode is really the ending and then it's like resolutions at the end.
I don't know. It didn't attempt to be funny really very much. And I think that, and something about it tonally felt off to me, but some people I think are like fundamentally moved by it. Mm. But as much as it didn't like tickle me pink, I feel like it is the appropriate ending for it. I don't feel like there was any better ending. Mm-hmm. I just feel like the execution of it. I really feel like this whole finale could have been a 10-minute montage at the end of the last episode. Mm. Because it's basically a, what happens to them now?
Okay.
I don't need that.
All right.
I don't need that for 90 minutes. But it did really well. Let's see, from Variety. The series finale scored a 0.7 rating among adults 18 to 49 and 2.3 million total viewers. Hmm. I don't know what that means, but it sounds good. Its best tally...
by today's standards, probably good.
It's best tally in both demographics since the season 4 premiere back in September.
I was always surprised by the success of The Good Place, because I didn't think it was necessarily doing that well in the first season, but I really liked it.
Yeah.
And I also wasn't watching it live. I'd, like, watched it after I saw the reviews come out about season 1 being really, really good, and then I binged that and then got into season 2. It's also, what, only 5 seasons?
Four.
Only 4?
Yeah.
So it's like one of those weird anomalies as far as American shows go where they kind of did the British thing where they just kind of like ended it when the story came to an end.
Yeah.
It never felt like they don't know what they're doing with the characters this season, which I always loved about the show. It kept going in new directions until it kind of naturally came to an end.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you never got the sense of it sort of stretching itself and trying to find its way, like the way some people felt about, you know, like Lost or something.
Yeah.
Or and like The Rise of Skywalker. Truncated. Like when you're like, all right, you're trying to find something.
Yeah.
Like I really think from episode 1, there was at least a rough idea in the creator's mind of what it was all supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. It makes me want to go back and go through his older shows too, right? Because it's Michael Schur.
Yeah. Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec is another one. Brooklyn I think Nine-Nine. I like their series finale. Oh, see, Brooklyn Nine-Nine is one of those where I'm like,
I liked it a lot in the first couple seasons, but then it just kept
going.
It's super
formulaic. I don't know. It doesn't dazzle me.
I was actually disappointed by the finale of Parks and Recreation.
It's another one that's like an epilogue where it just keeps, you know, just picks up on where everybody is.
Yeah, actually,
they're
very similar now that I think about it.
I guess maybe that's how he does endings. I feel like in this scenario, it works probably better than it did with Parks and Rec because it's like, well, it's about their like journey to an end, I guess. Yeah. Whereas with them, also, I wasn't clear with Leslie. Was she the governor or the president?
Well, they make it unclear that it's somebody's the president, either her or her husband, but they make it unclear who.
I would be bummed if it was Ben. Like, I love Ben, but, like, that's Leslie's dream.
Yeah.
But it kind of was the mayor of Icetown, so he like also wanted to be a politician.
Yes. Oh, so good. Well, all right, here's a spoiler in 3, 2, 1. Like, every scene is like a billion years in, but like in this finale, it's like something happens, and then like a couple trillion years later, and then like something else happens. And it's like
Jeremy Baramies later.
Yeah, literally, that's what it says. It'll say like 2.5 Jeremy Baramies later.
Jeremy Baramy, baby.
Yeah.
This broke me. the dot on the I. Oh my God, Chidi. What a gift.
I love Chidi.
I didn't know where the series was going, you know, at first. And I knew, like, Jamila Jamil was somebody. So I knew they were going to keep her around. But I really had no clue, like, from episode one, like, who they were going to keep. So I thought, like, maybe Chidi was going to be, like, only in a couple of episodes. And they're going to move on. I'm so happy he wasn't, that he's, like, a main cast member. It's so, so good.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Did you see Midsommar?
No, but I know he's in it.
He's in it. Mm. And he's pretty intense in it.
Okay, so he's got range.
Yeah, he does have range.
He's got the range.
Yeah. I think he'll do more things.
I hope he does.
I'm not sure if the guy who plays Jason is going to do a lot more.
That's all right. We love Jason.
But he's pretty.
Yeah, he is. He's got good, great cheekbones.
Right? I think I saw him in an ad or something.
I'm sure. He's probably a model. Donkey Doug. His dad. Donkey Dad.
When they revealed that his stupid buddy that you see in all the flashbacks was actually his dad. That was one of the biggest surprises of the whole show. Well, no, that's
like Donkey Doug, the guy he's constantly telling stories about, is his father. Because Pillboy is his best friend.
Right, right.
Pillboy.
All the Jackson, Florida jokes.
So good. And I love that, you know, it's like Tahani and Chidi are like pretty highbrow in general, and like Eleanor and Jason are really lowbrow, so they kind of balance each other out in that way. There's a lot of great, they really, I think, have incredible chemistry as far as a cast. Like, they really nailed the characters, and like Darcy Carden is such a phenomenal actress.
They were a really good cast together.
Yeah, I think they were great together, and also just like beautiful diversity in a cast on a major, you know, sitcom on a network. I thought
it's kind of amazing that it is a network show.
Yeah,
because it's such a weird idea, and it purposely doesn't stick to its original premise, and it changes what it is. I mean, every season has been fundamentally different, and you know, different, just going all over the place. And
well, it's just the strength of the characters, that it's the gel that really, it's that like line, that's the thread that they've pulled through every season, because they really do throw them into different environments, scenarios. This is where the show is going now, and I think it's on the strength of those characters that are able to, and also Ted Danson always like behind the scenes pulling.
Ted Danson's fantastic.
Pulling the strings. I love Ted Danson so much. When he hopped behind the bar and was the bartender in that one episode, I like shrieked. It's like, cheers! Oh my God. So he's so natural behind a bar, just wiping it down.
He's so he's such troubles. A likable, affable.
He really is. I love Ted Danson. What a great head of
hair. It's interesting. In the 80s in like Cheers, he was like sort of a sexy, cool guy. Mm-hmm. And now he's sort of like cool professor. He's like twee.
Yeah.
But eternal. Like, you like him. Yeah. Like he's going to wear a very finely cut suit.
Yeah. But also just like,
but still be fun.
Super funny. Like, great comic timing still. Like, his instincts are as sharp as ever.
Yeah.
I love him. And like, everybody on the cast seems to love him too. Just, if you ever see any of the behind the scenes stuff, he's always cracking them up, which I think is really funny.
Yeah.
I love that.
He was on, what was it? Was he on Pete Holmes' podcast, or was somebody else from the show on Pete Holmes' podcast talking about Ted Danson? They were talking about acting and like what acting really is as a job. Mm. And Ted Danson, I think he said to Kristen Bell, "It's embarrassing, isn't it? Isn't it embarrassing to act? All these people looking at us and we're pretending." Like, which is like, so I feel like that's so honest, because it's got to be embarrassing. If you told me act in right now on a TV show and all these cameras on me, I'd be like, no.
Right? Like, oh, I don't
want to. No.
Yeah. Well, that's because you don't have that empty soul that's craving attention.
I know. Even when you look at behind the scenes stuff, it's cringy.
It is. Yeah.
It's like, oh, look at him acting. You want to go to Trailer Corner?
Sure.
Let's mosey on into that Trailer Corner.
All right.
Where do we start? Very wildly different trailers.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I'm very excited about one of them.
Okay. I would say probably the same for me. Probably, maybe the same one.
Where do you want to begin?
I don't want to tell you.
Do
you want to save that one for last?
Okay.
All right.
Let's begin with Fantasy Island.
This is the one I'm least excited about, I would say.
But I'm fascinated by it.
Okay, okay.
Because it is the inevitable place that we've gotten to
in
how the machine works.
Okay, as far as like reboots and...
In terms of, you know, going back to like the 80s and 90s and how IP and copyright law became this thing that, going back to Disney again, became this very powerful thing that they realized this is great power in intellectual property. And how the big corporations sort of bought up as much of these ideas as possible.
Mm.
And how the machine of content creation and the machine of Hollywood has for so long now, in its process of baking a movie, right? The first step, the crust, is IP.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we would have said a few years ago, who is this movie for?
Mm-hmm.
It's based on the television drama Fantasy Island, yet it's a horror.
Mm-hmm.
And the show is not a horror. The show was a romantic kind of drama soap opera.
Mm-hmm.
So you go, well, why? Is it for the people who like Fantasy Island? Is it for someone else? Is it for anybody who just recognizes the name?
Right.
And I'd say actually none of those answers are true. I think it's just this is the way the machine works.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just like you're baking the pie and it's like that's the crust. Why would we even come up with an original idea?
There's no point.
Like, there's no value. Like, literally, like, creative people value the idea of original ideas, but they don't value that. It's like, what do I have in my cupboard? Oh, this show, Fantasy Island? Well, we'll put that in the pie.
That's one of the things I absolutely admire and respect about horror producers, because it's one of those things where people, there was this whole article a few years back, and it was like, if you want to make money in the movie industry, make horror films, because they cost like nothing to make. They always do well. They always get a return on their investment because you spend like nothing on it, and you release it like in the winter when there's no movies out. Or like Valentine's Day. This is coming out on Valentine's Day. Yeah. It's like you just want a date night movie. People love going to get scared in the movies.
It's Blumhouse. And
it's Blumhouse,
Jason Blum, I think.
He's brilliant. I think
he's brilliant in
he's like
what
Rumpelstiltskin. He spins gold. He really does.
Not some of his movies are very good.
And most of them are shit.
Some of them are bad.
Like, this is made by the same guy who did Truth or Dare.
And which I thought was a really bad movie.
And stars the same actress, Lucy Hale, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Truth or Dare was a real stinker. But, like, Get Out was a Blumhouse movie.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. For every 10 bad ones, he's got a good one.
Right. And I didn't like the new Halloween, but the new Halloween almost shows Jason Blum's power. Because it's like, oh, now I want to make a Halloween movie.
Well, you know, it makes sense to have the ratio of like mediocre slash bad to good that they have, because it's like we're in the money making business. We're not necessarily in the film making business. Like, we don't give a shit if we make a good film. We care if we make money. So we're not going to invest in good writers or good actors or, you know, anything for most of these movies. And then we're going to pick our little projects that we're actually going to put money into. And those are the movies that are going to be good.
Right.
So this one, so it's Fantasy Island Horror.
Right.
Because, let's say what the movie is. So it's Fantasy Island. It's a reboot, but it's a horror reboot.
Mm-hmm.
Seems more like a thriller, you know, than like a true
It seems like horror, Needful Things, kind of like your fantasy will
be careful
end up,
what you wish for, because you might get it. You know, it's like, they seem like kind of shitty people, although one of them doesn't. Like, one of them seems to have, like, lost a child, which it's like, why are you torturing this person?
Yeah, really.
Like, the other one, like, the Lucy Hale character is like, I just want to get even with my high school bully.
Right.
Like, that's your wish? Like, that's your greatest wish in life? But okay, you know, go off, I guess. So, and then, you know, their encounter, this is all in the trailer, so she's like, wow, it's all holograms. That's like, she's telling them, like, it's all holograms. It's obviously, that's how they get people here. So when she goes in, it's like a Saw kind of torture room.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, wow, this hologram's really good. And it's like, wait, no, that's actually her.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she doesn't want to take her apart and kill her.
And then you see, like, that woman's, like, I guess, dead kid comes back. So there's a lot of magic going on here.
Stuff. Also, what, and Michael Pena is the Mr. Yeah. What's his name? I don't know.
I don't know who played him in the... Yeah, who played him? What's that character's name?
And I
who
don't
played
know. Him? I know Tattoo.
Yes. Is there a tattoo in this?
Is the girl Tattoo?
What? Hashtag not my tattoo.
Oh, no. The woman who's like, your life is about to change forever.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe that's Tattoo. And then she seems like good. I don't know. But then her nose starts bleeding at one point. So you're like, oh, no. Is she part of... I don't know.
Ricardo Montalban.
Maybe we will see it.
I can't wait to see it now. I've told myself to.
Let's go on a double date on Valentine's Day and go see Fantasy Island.
Ricardo Montalban played the Michael Pena role.
Yeah, but what was the name?
I don't know, but it's Ricardo Montalban. All right. He's Khan.
You know, all right,
I wait,
know.
All right, let's see. What's his name?
What's his name? Remember that Fantasy Island Love Boat crossover? Me neither.
Me neither. Mr. Rourke.
Mr. Rourke.
Right.
Of course. How could we forget?
So,
do you know I've seen exactly one episode of Fantasy Island?
I've seen zero.
Okay, so I'm ahead of you. I saw the one from the 1999 reboot on ABC.
That doesn't count.
Short-lived.
Reboots don't count.
It was Twilight Zone-y, kind of. Mm-hmm. Like...
Is there magic in the show? Like, yeah. When you go to the show, does your fantasies come through?
The one episode that I saw, true? It's like, I don't know if the original series is like this, because I don't know if they were just like tweaking it for the reboot. So here's what I saw. And listeners, please call in. The one episode that I saw was this guy who was like a big time germaphobe.
Okay.
And he is having his fantasy on the island at the same time as this other woman who's like an adventurer, right? And she's having like a big kind of swashbuckling adventure on the island. And he's like, no, thanks, not for me. And his dream is to go into this like completely sterile environment. So he has this like perfect suite where everything is like vacuum sealed and he's going to be like completely germ free for the entirety of his vacation, right? And at one point, this woman's adventure takes her smashing through the glass of his completely sterile suite. And she ends up like roping him into this adventure. And along the way, he learns to like not fear life and not fear germs. And he ends up having a great time. And like he, you know, engages with the world around him. So like that's his lesson, right? Is to like not be afraid of everything. And when they leave, they go to leave the island. He was going to ask her like, well, what was your... Like, did you have a lesson? And then you see she can't walk. She's in a wheelchair. So her dream wasn't to have an adventure. Her dream was to be able to, like, use her legs. And so she's, like, given the opportunity. Like, I did everything I could to get out there in the world. You can do this every day. Like, you should. And so I don't know if that was, like, what Fantasy Island was all about. But that was what the reboot was all about.
Okay. So it you can kind of see it lending it. I don't know. It just seems like cheap horror, though.
I hope there's a Love Boat horror that comes out soon.
Jason Blum is like he's on it. I'm sure. Did you are you familiar with the I think last year or 2 years ago there was a Banana Splits movie where they made it as a horror.
I don't know what that is.
Well, you know Banana Splits?
No.
Banana Splits was a show from, I believe it was the 60s, could have been the 70s.
Okay.
It was, I think, a Marty Croft show. They were a band, but they're also, they're basically just people in costumes.
Okay.
How do you spell banana?
B-A-N-A-N-A.
I know. B-A-N-A-N-A. Okay, banana.
Banana Splits. It was called the Banana Splits?
Mm-hmm.
Were they like the monkeys?
Yes, they were a lot like the monkeys. Yes, it's from the 60s.
Were they the monkeys?
No, because
they were going to be eaten by the monkeys. Really, monkeys like to eat beetles. So,
wow, was that, wait, my mind is pre-blown. Was that the whole reason? Was that the joke?
Probably not.
What? I'm going to tell people at a cocktail parties.
All right.
Because I go to cocktail parties.
I'm I have to get invited to a cocktail party. And I'm not inviting you to mine. Why does everybody know what the Banana Splits is except for me? I only know the Lovin' Spoonful. I've never seen this in my life.
These are the Banana
what
Splits.
What is this? Okay. Oh, wait. Was this like that horror movie that was like Five Nights at Freddy's?
Right.
Where it was like a Chuck E. Cheese type thing?
Yes.
Okay.
But the original show was not that. It was not a horror. It was just these mascots running around being fun and playing music. And
all right. Well.
So I feel like this Fantasy Island is similar.
Sure. Was it also Blumhouse?
No, it was sci-fi original.
Oh.
But it's like, let's take something that existed, sure. and we're going to make it a horror
Why
now.
Why not?
Just slap a different genre on it. Gives
you know
a
what
shit.
I will say, though? I don't like a tropical horror. It's too happy. I don't like it.
You give you're setting yourself up for a hard...
This is a beautiful beach yeah. where I'm relaxed. There's a lot of sounds of waves, which is relaxing psychologically.
Yeah. It's, so you don't like I Still Know What You Did Last Summer?
Oh, is that a tropical one? Yes. I've never seen it.
Jack Black is in it.
Is he being Jack Black?
No, he's being very problematic in it.
Is he?
Yeah. Wait, I'm just going to Google Jack Black in I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh, no. Does he have dreads?
And you tell me how you feel. Just tell me how you feel, like a Rorschach test.
What does this image bring to mind? No.
There we go.
Dreads. Yeah. I knew it was going to be dreads.
Yep.
Listen. You gotta let him be him.
You gotta hear what his voice sounds like in it.
No. I refuse.
I refuse to hear that. Downhill.
Okay. So then we're on the same page.
Yes. Downhill is... Okay, so this is a remake, but mm-hmm. this version of Downhill is about Will Ferrell and his wife, Julie Louis-Dreyfus, mm-hmm. and their kids, and they're at a resort, ski resort.
Yep.
And at the ski resort, once a day, they do this thing where they purposely cause an avalanche.
Right, it's controlled avalanche.
Right. So, but when that happens...
Which I think they do, actually, at ski resorts.
I would imagine.
I wouldn't know. I don't ski.
So, in the trailer, you see them at this resort, and he's being Will Ferrell. I mean, it's right. a little bit toned down, but he's still Will Ferrell-y. And then the avalanche happens.
Right, so they're eating lunch
yes.
outside with their family. So it's the two of them, the married couple, and they have two young boys. And they're eating lunch outside on a terrace, and there's like a lot of other people. And you see the explosion happen. Like, Julie Louis-Dreyfus is like, is that okay? Like, should that be happening? And then the snow starts cascading down the mountain.
Yeah.
But it's coming really fast, and it looks like there's a lot of it. And it looks like it's going to overwhelm the terrace that they're sitting on. And they're not the only ones who freak out. Like, pretty much everybody eating lunch is like, oh, shit. Like, and, like, take off running, screaming. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of this crisis occurring, Will Ferrell gets up. grabs his phone, takes off running.
No, first he gets up and runs, comes back for his phone.
I didn't realize that. Okay, so that's worse. So he does that while Julia Louis-Dreyfus is like
protecting her kids,
like puts her arms like around her kids and like tries to shield them with her body. Because also I think it's like critical that they're sitting at like a picnic style table where it's kind of difficult to like get up in a hurry from a picnic table. And they're sitting on like the far end of the table. So they can't like, they just like get up, scoot around like, and run. Whereas he just like hops up and takes off.
Right, right. And then we see.
And that is the
That's it. That's
basically
the premise.
What happens, and then basically like it unravels out of that on their marriage,
right?
On their family.
You see them then in like a situation where they're hanging out with another couple,
yeah,
and they're arguing about it,
right? And he's like, "Well, like he's basically justifying what he did," and she's like, "No, no,
right?" And also like lying and saying like, "No, I was going to come back. Right. I was going to get help."
Yeah,
stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, because then I don't remember if this is from the trailer, if this was in force majeure, but they were like, well, maybe he was going away so he could come back and rescue you guys and dig you out. And they're like, uh-huh. Meanwhile, the girlfriend's like, no, that's really rough. That's bad. And she's like, thank you.
Yeah.
Which is like, what does this mean when like the patriarch of your family is like, peace out. Good luck.
Right.
See you when I see you. Like, goodbye,
so
children.
It looks good for what it is, but it's a remake of the 2014 movie Force Majeure, which was a Swedish movie. It was produced by production in Sweden, France, and Norway, and the languages spoken in it are Swedish, English, French, and Norwegian. But the Swedish film, unsurprisingly, is much drier, much more of a dark satire.
Yeah,
it's the same story, but it's not Will Ferrell. It's much less goofy.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this movie looks totally goofy. It does look like they're trying. at least a little bit to get at the tone of the original.
Yeah.
The cinematography looks very cold and bare.
Yeah, there's nothing warm about the...
Right. So it looks like, you know, it's a cut above a typical mm-hmm. Will Ferrell movie. But it's still, to me, having seen the original, feels like... I feel like it's going to miss it. Because the original is such a... It's one of these movies of like... You know, it's like manners. It's a movie of like subtleties. Like, they don't... Like, in the trailer, the next scene, they're arguing about him running away.
Right.
In Force Majeure, first of all, there's no jokes. Like, it's a comedy in that it's ridiculous. And if you stand back and look at it, you're like, this is so silly.
This is so weird, yeah.
But there's no jokes in it. It takes itself super seriously. Yeah. And it's very dramatic. But... In the original movie, the event happens with the avalanche, and then it's like, there's like another hour of like, she's cold to him, and his kids are upset, and like it's just like it's not being said,
right? It's like
and then finally they drink,
yeah,
and then she's like, you left, and then it finally comes out, and it ends. I'm gonna give you a spoiler for Force Majeure because I would bet any amount of money this is not how the American movie ends. It ends with him like breaking down and crying, and his family forgives him for his weakness and like hugs him. But
right, because he's like, I'm making it sound more saccharine than it is.
Right,
like he's basically like confronting
right.
like what a
he like breaks down and like
fundamentally a coward.
Right,
yeah, and that's like who he is, and that's like what their family has to deal with. Like, we have a coward.
I mean, really, the original movie really makes you think about like how would that happen?
Premise because nothing happened.
Right,
but.
Everything happened.
It's the prom. It's like this catastrophe didn't almost happen even. It was totally fine. Like the situation was fine, but everyone got scared. So it's like it puts you in this position of like, what if? Because that was just very real. It felt very real.
Right.
And you utterly failed. And it was not a test. It was like, well, it was a test, but it was like. You know, nobody knew, but it's like now we know how you would react in a real situation.
Exactly. I think in so many relationships, whether it be husband and wife or parent to child or whatever your relationship is, when there's love there, there is an implicit unconditional nature or unconditional assumption.
Unconditional assumption.
Right. Like, but in reality, is that really there?
And the two kids are operating on this assumption, and now they have to confront the reality where
that dad would have left.
Actually conditional.
If they were going to die, dad would have left and lived, and they would have died.
Yeah.
And she has to deal with the fact that her husband would have left her to die and their children.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested in seeing the new movie. It has a cameo in it by. Not the star of the original movie, but
he's a friend.
The friend in the original movie.
Christopher Hivju?
Something.
He's from Game of Thrones.
Very good looking, redheaded fellow.
Yes.
The new movie looks good. It looks, you know, it's Americanized. You know, it's exactly what you would expect when you take this really clever foreign film and say, we're going to do it with... You know, if they didn't cast Will Ferrell, I think it would have a better chance at getting
like
at something.
Will Ferrell, extremely.
But I don't think he's trying to be serious, Will Ferrell, in this. I feel like he's trying to be silly. I mean, maybe it's toned down a little bit. It's not exactly like what's that horrible movie where he hires Kevin Hart to teach him how to be tough because he's going to prison. What is it called?
Get Hard.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not that Will Ferrell.
All right. Well, he's pretty good in Stranger Than Fiction. And that's not like haha funny.
I've never seen that.
It's like a, I guess it would be more of like a serious role for him, I guess.
Okay.
But it's like,
he's good.
It's kind of funny. It's a ridiculous premise, but I don't know. I like him in it.
The
he can do it. Like if he needs to.
The actor in the original film is such a,
he's got such a punchable face.
Yeah. But he's such a nothing guy. Like he's like, dad, he's like handsome but not insanely handsome. He's a nice dad, like he's just a normal average schmuck. And then like his fucking life unravels on a vacation because he fucking
it's also that idea of being on vacation. Like often I feel like families will get into fights on vacation. Or married couples will get on because they're forced to just be with each other and do nothing else.
There's also pressure, like we're spending money. We're supposed to be enjoying ourselves so much.
Yeah, because like you get into the rhythms of everyday life and you have, like, you go to work, you have your things that you do in the morning, you have kids, you have things you do with your kids, and you're kept very, very busy. Mm-hmm. And so you go to sleep at night and you're tired, right? And on vacation, you don't have any of that. It's like a vacuum and you're just like with each other. And it's a true test of like, do we actually like to spend time with each other?
Right.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's like a perfect storm of all these bad things happening, all these like tests on their relationship and their family integrity.
This, something like this happened. My older brother was like choking on a hot dog or something, and my mother ran away.
For fight or flight cooking.
Yeah. And my dad saved him, but my mom ran away.
Better luck next time.
She was just so freaked out. She didn't know what to do.
I've seen, like, firsthand people who were choking run. That's something that happens sometimes. Well, your fight or flight kicks in and you just like start running, like you get nuts. I think a lot of people die in bathrooms because
you think you'll just like you just so go to the bathroom, right?
That they're choking publicly, that they just die. Go to the bathroom. And
they just go die alone, like a sick dog.
Literally died of embarrassment at that point.
Oh God. Oh my God.
Oh, your mom.
Yeah, that's what unraveled my family.
don't joke in front of her. She's not gonna help you.
She's not gonna enjoy this movie. So the last trailer, which is the movie that I'm very excited about, is Wendy. It is a retelling of Peter Pan.
Mm-hmm.
It's the director of
Beast of the Southern Wild.
Right. Which, have you seen that?
I have.
That movie's got, it's got a really amazing like 5-year-old actor in it. Yeah. Like it's the best child performance ever.
Is it Kevinzani or Kevinzani? I've heard her name pronounced a couple of different ways.
The kid?
Kevinzani Wallace is the actress in Beast of the Southern Wild.
I don't remember. She was like literally
she's
a little
so
kid.
She's so cute. I mean, she's great though. Yeah. She's like very intense.
The director is Ben Zeitlin.
Is this his follow-up to that movie?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
And
that was a while ago.
8 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But what's great about that movie, which it seems like will be true for this movie, is
it looks very similar.
It's got an insane realism, like a gritty...
There's a grime to his films. Right. Like a
but
rust.
But also a magical realism.
Yeah.
Like,
oh,
there's
yeah,
magic
films.
In that movie.
Yeah. I mean, this one is taking off a fairy tale, but Beast of the Southern Wild also has magic in it.
And so this is Wendy. So you and it looks like it's in contemporary time.
Yeah.
And you see a little girl like run away and she meets up with these lost boys. And Peter Pan is this adorable little African American boy in this
so
like little
cute.
Red suit or something.
He's got a little blazer on.
And it feels like Lord of the Flies. It feels like
very
really
much
like
Lord of the Flies.
Like
yeah.
these are real little kids that are just
like,
living
just like
animals.
On an island and we're, you know, they're in danger all the
Even
time.
The pirates look like fucking
the pirates
real pirates.
It's very similar to that because Beast of the Southern Wild had like a real like Louisiana bayou feel to it. And like I think at one point they're on that is it like an oil rig or something?
In that movie?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
There's like that place where I guess they're
there's just
workers,
texture oh yeah yeah yeah
it's like floating out in the water and they go there like and everything is like all the boats and stuff in that movie are covered in rust and they look like they're falling apart and like all the like the pirate ship in this one looks like it's also falling apart and it's like gross old men
like, right they really look like pirates
the nastiest looking people you've ever seen. There is a real I don't know, like just a grittiness and grime to it, but it also makes Peter Pan feel so modern.
Right. It feels like, wow, this might be, we've talked about this before on the podcast, how if you can capture the spirit of a story, you might make a more faithful adaptation, even if it looks nothing like what the original story looked like. Because this is clearly looks a different way, but yet I got a feeling from it. Just from the trailer, I was like, it gave me life. I got this feeling of like, wow. It also had a very like Maurice Sendak, Where the Wild Things Are feeling.
Yeah. Especially, what is it, Spike Jones?
Yeah.
There's such a sadness to that movie. And I felt, I told you, I'm like, this trailer makes me sad. But like, I like it. It is melancholic.
Yeah.
As you said. But that's totally, that's also, Beast of the Southern Wild is like that too. It's like, this whimsical like spirit of childhood, and at the same time, I don't know. I feel like what he's capturing, and I imagine in both films, because we haven't seen this one yet, but I feel like he's simultaneously capturing the like joy of childhood and the loss of it at the same time. Like the loss of that innocence.
Yeah.
Like children becoming wise in the world and what that means. They even say that. What they have to lose in order to do that. And that's what Peter Pan is. Though. Yeah. Like that's the story of Peter Pan. It's why he can't remember anything.
There's a point in the trailer where like Wendy says like, you'll grow up if you don't, like if you without even realizing it. Yeah. And like one of the little kids looks and he has like dirt on his hands.
Yeah.
And then like she's like the wild ones though, the ones with the crazy look in their eye. Mm. Now let me ask you, I've watched it a bunch of times and this director is known for his magical realism. Mm-hmm. But is it possible that there's no magic at all in this film?
I think it's possible. Although
the only thing that looks magical is there are these bioluminescent things. Yeah, yeah. But there are bioluminescent.
Yeah, there are bioluminescent sea creatures in reality, but they're usually pretty deep in the water. They don't come up that far.
Okay. There's a scene where she's talking, I assume, to Tinkerbell, but you just see her little hand and you don't see anything in it.
Yeah.
And it could be anything. It could be a leaf. Anything. You know, it could be any little kid her thing. Right.
Yeah. I was thinking it's possible that she just ran away.
Yeah.
With a group of kids and like.
Yeah.
Then comes back. Who knows? I don't know.
And the big snowflake feminist in me loves that it's Wendy and not Peter Pan. That it's like looking that at it from her point of view.
Yeah, that she's the agent of her own adventure.
Right, he's not just taking her on.
Right. Yeah, she's like, because in the beginning, she's like jumping on a train.
Yeah.
She's just heading out there.
Yeah, I know.
In just like a big t-shirt.
Yeah.
Which I love.
Which is,
like,
of course, that's how you would look if you ran away in the middle of the night.
That's what I used to sleep in, just a big old t-shirt.
Right. Well, if a children who were running away, that's what they would really look like.
No shoes, a big t-shirt. That's it.
Peter Pan gets to be the leader because he's got a little red suit on.
Yeah, he's got a blazer on. We listen to him. He's got shoulder pads.
It looks, I hope it's as good as it looks because it looks like sweet and beautiful. Yeah.
So.
And what a great adaptation of.
Peter Pan is so hard to adapt. For whatever reason.
And they've tried it a lot of times.
A bunch of times. And it just kind of never works.
But you love Peter Pan, right?
I love Peter Pan. I just love...
You ever think about Tattoo?
I do. That Henry just noticed, like, last week.
Right.
And he's like, what's that? I like, don't worry about it. Yeah, I love the story. I love that idea of not being able to become wise, right? Like, because Peter Pan's been alive forever, but he's not wise. Why? Because he never remembers anything. He immediately forgets. Part of the Tinkerbell tattoo, right? The idea of having it inked on me is because he forgets her. She, like, fairies don't live that long in the lore of Peter Pan, so they die pretty quickly. And when he goes back and talks to Wendy, like, years later, she's like, and Tinkerbell, is she still around? And he's like, who? And she's like, what do you, like, that was your best friend. What do you mean? Like, you don't remember her? And, like, he does not remember her at all because the second it's gone, it leaves his mind. That's why, like, he comes back so many years later. He thinks it was, like, yesterday. He doesn't remember how time passes. It's a deeply sad story, like, when you're really reading into it.
Well, like you said, there's definitely a sadness in this trailer. Because you got to think about the Lost Boys, like, the kids run away for a reason, right?
It's usually not just to seek adventure. It's because something bad is happening for the most part at home. And in a lot of ways, in, I don't remember her name, but in Beasts of the Southern Wild, the character is very much like a little lost boy on her own, too. Like, she has a father, but he's like not super parental to her. And then, I mean, spoiler alert for that movie, was 8 years old. He does die at the end of the movie. So she's on her own. She's like completely on her own in the world because her mother is just not around. Yeah, it's either Kevin Zane or I've heard like Kevin. I actually don't know how to an other way to pronounce it because that's the one I've heard the
Kevin Zane Wallace.
Yeah. But what's the character she plays in Southern Abyss of Southern Wild?
Hush Puppy.
That's it.
All I remember from that movie is, like, them making, like, gumbo and there being, like, crawfish everywhere. And she's, like, dancing on a table.
She's, like, a very violent relationship with her father. She's super young in it. And, like, I think, I don't know if she stabs him or, like, he gets stabbed at some point.
Yeah.
But it's weird because they're, like, completely isolated in, like, this bayou community that's, like, cut off by, like, levees and stuff.
Yeah.
But they're on their own. It seems like an extremely small community that, like, doesn't have a lot of access to the outside world, which is supposed to be based on a real community that is in Louisiana. It's a fascinating movie. It's also like a beautiful movie. So I'm sure Wendy will also be gorgeous. His movies also remind me of like Terrence Malick films a lot.
You know, I don't think I've ever seen a Terrence Malick movie.
Oh, really? I feel like Terrence Malick just like tells a story through editing. Mm. Like, I mean, what filmmaker doesn't, I guess, but it's just shots.
Yeah.
Like beautiful shots that like pieced together are telling the story without a lot of like Soviet
montage.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the documentary Tell Them What You Want? It's about Maurice Sendak. It's also by Spike Jonze.
Is it the one Catherine Keener's in?
She's like hanging out with him.
Yes, I've seen that.
I love that documentary because it's just this old man who's just so, he's so not avuncular. He's so cranky and irascible and just,
you don't think of him as a children's book,
right? And he even says like, I'm not a children's, he's like, I don't like kids that much. And he talks about like they would say to him like, you can't make a sad children's book. And he's like, why? Childhood is sad.
He tells this great story in that documentary about like the thing that stuck out to him the most in his childhood is he made a drawing of the Lindbergh baby.
Yeah.
And like when it was found, and he spent like his whole life trying to find that picture that inspired it. But like, no, like basically when he was a kid, nobody would show it to him again. Like he saw it by accident. Yeah. And because they were trying to protect him, but it stayed with him. That like specter of a child dead was,
wow.
It like really stayed with him for his whole life. I mean, he's still talking about it in his old age. And at an event after he was already an author, this guy who was a Lindbergh like historian came up to him and was like, that picture. Mm-hmm. He's like, did you ever see it again? And he's like, no. He's like, but I drew it from memory. And Maurice Sendak showed him the drawing, and the historian was like, I have it, and opened it. And
oh my God.
The drawing was like exactly the picture. Whoa. It stayed in his mind so much that it was like, wow. He was able to reproduce it. And he's like, that's the picture.
And that guy becomes a children's book author.
He is a children's book author. Inspired by another kid's death. It's child. So wild. Yeah.
But what I love about it is it's not edgy. It's not like Tim Burton, where it's like, it's a kid's movie, but it's dark. Like, it captures the actual darkness of being an actual
child. Like, the pain of having, like
why, you can't, you have no agency, and the world is scary.
Yeah.
And
he's, like, acting out. He's being, like, a nut at dinner. Yeah. Right? And it's, like, you know it, like, well, at least when I was bad as a kid, like, it pained me to hurt my parents, or, like, it pained me to hurt my mom, especially, right? Like, I didn't want to be bad. But, like, I felt like so much angst,
right?
Like childhood angst
that I'll
like
eat I you need up.
To get it. Yeah, I'm gonna eat you up. Like I'm gonna do it. Yeah. And but at the same time, you're like there's something gnawing inside of you because you know that you did wrong, but you don't want to admit it. And like I feel like that book captures that so beautifully.
Right.
And it's very, you know, in very few words.
And then there's that scene where he turns on the Wild Things and he sends them to bed without dinner because that's what his mom did
that's
to
what
him.
His mom did. Yeah.
And then when he leaves, they say, "Please don't go. We'll eat you up. We love you so."
Mm-hmm.
Because saying I'll eat you up means I love you to little Max. Anyway, aww. Maurice Sendak. Anyway, I have a fast pass for the Flight of Peter Pan ride.
Okay.
Because of all the classic dark rides, that one is still hugely popular and always has a big line. So
I love that one. It's a good one.
Take a break.
All right.
And we'll come back and talk about I don't know what. This is PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm here today with the irascible Janine Gagliardi.
Hello.
How you doing after that first segment?
Very good.
Yeah?
I'm warming up.
Good. I'm glad.
It's almost done. Getting warmed up.
This is a chill sesh. This is a shesh where we shill.
Chill and chill sesh.
If we ever get advertisers, I'm going to call it the chill sesh.
The chill sesh. That would be great.
So,
Hello Fresh. It's always
stamps.com.
It's always one of those
Casper matches.
Yeah.
So, what are you chilling with?
We just finished the second season of Sex Education.
I have not seen that.
Have you seen any of it?
No.
I remember I told you about the first season. I think Nadia also talked about it.
I remember Nadia talking about it.
So season two is great. I really love it. It's the show about this kid in high school. Mm-hmm. His mom is a sex therapist. So as a result of being exposed to her, he has like all this relevant knowledge. Okay. And he gives, even though he's like a virgin himself, and he gives out sex advice at his school.
That's fun.
He starts like a little job. This season is really good. And they deal with a lot of topics, and they always deal with them with a lot of sensitivity and really? Heart. And so, like, the first season, I think I was telling you about the abortion clinic storyline, where they humanize, you know, both the people going in to have abortions and also the people protesting.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting, because you never see, like, that other side. Right. At least from a story that's telling a perspective that's sympathetic to abortions.
Yeah.
Like, you never see the humanity of the people who are, like, both anti-abortion. Sides. Yeah. So I thought that was really interesting. This, I mean, not that it's a storyline, but they touch on asexuality really beautifully, I think. They handle it really nicely.
Is there any group of people more underrepresented than asexual people?
I mean, maybe not, but they, I mean, it's in the trailers right. for the season, so it's not really a spoiler, but basically right. this girl comes to the boy's mother, who is now like consulting at the school to like revamp the sex education curriculum there. Uh-huh. So she has like an office at the school now where mm-hmm. she's not really giving out sex advice, but like all these kids come in to get it.
Uh-huh.
And it ends up hitting unknowingly, because like the mom has no idea that her son is doing this. Mm. It ends up pitting the mom against the son, like whose sex advice is better.
Ooh.
And for some kids, his advice works. And for others, hers is much better. So for like the asexual one, she goes to him and he's like, well, you just haven't found the right person yet. And she's like, no, that's not right. And so then she goes to her and says, like, I think I might be broken. And she's like, well, sex doesn't make you whole. So you could never be broken. Like that's uh-huh. nothing to do with it, you know? And she's like, but I still want love and relationship. And she's like, a lot of asexual people do. That's fine. Like, you can have a romantic relationship that's not sexual. Like,
so does the show itself, through its narrative, bring up real issues about sexuality?
And, I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. It's rarely tied up with, like, a neat bow.
Oh, okay.
Which I like about the show. And it really has a lot of representation in terms of, like, LGBTQ, AI, pansexuality. Uh-huh. They deal with a lot of stuff. Like one of the characters who you think is closeted, like, uh-huh. and is like, I think I'm actually bisexual, which is mm-hmm. interesting. And that's like played for comedy in one scene, but it's, mm-hmm. he's never treated as a joke.
Uh-huh.
Like in one scene, he's like masturbating and he has a poster uh-huh. and it's like a really muscular guy holding like this half naked woman. And he's like looking at the woman's boobs and he like flashes to the guy's abs and he like goes back to the woman and he's like going back. And so it's like, and then it's all ruined because his dog comes in and starts barking. And he's like, damn it. And it's just, it's a really funny scene, but then it ends up being this gateway to talk about this like other thing that's, you know, more interesting. I like it. I like the friendships on the show. There's a lot of like unlikely friendships that they flesh out on the show.
Really?
And then one of the storylines deals with the sex assault.
Really?
That is the thing I love about the show, that a lot of teen, I think it's a trap that a lot of teen shows fall into, is they fall into melodrama. This show never really does that. Like we have a kid who self-harms, but it looks so innocent. And you're like,
really?
You look at it and you're, as a viewer, you're like, okay, we know he did this on purpose, but right. at the same time, it's like, is it really that serious? And then the show treats it like, no, that's self-harm and that's really Ooh. Serious. And then this sex assault occurs. And so one of the characters gets, is on a public bus and somebody masturbates onto her on the public bus. And she realizes it as it's happening. It's like, I'd like to get off the bus. And, like, the bus driver doesn't do – like, the bus driver's not made aware of what's happening. But, like, she's like, I need to get off uh-huh. the bus. And she just gets off the bus. And when she goes to school, she laughs about it. And then her friend is like, you were just assaulted. Like, we're going to the police station. And she's like, no, I don't want to make a big deal. And it's like, no, that's a big deal. Like,
wow.
It's not, you know, as dramatic as – I mean, actually, I can't even say this. She is really traumatized by this event. But it's not – I think the way a lot of teen shows would go, which is like kind of hitting you over the head with sexual assault. It's like, it's rape. Like we know like rape with a capital R is sexual assault. This is something that you maybe don't know is sexual assault. Right. The show is telling you, like, no, this is another form of sexual assault.
You could make a joke about the ridiculousness of it, but it's still serious, and you could still be harmed by it.
Yeah, and she doesn't. And then you see throughout the series, because this happens kind of early on in the season, that this character who's like into fashion and like wears high heel shoes a lot is. Like, in every episode, you just see her, like, going to the bus stop and then being like, oh, it's okay, I'll take the next one. And then she just starts walking to school. And then by, like, the second to last episode of the season, it's like she's now wearing sneakers because she has to walk to school all the time. And and she finally breaks down and she's like, I can't take the bus. So it's I don't know. I really like it a lot. I like the storylines. It's interesting.
From the name of it and from the thumbnail that Netflix chose to show me, thinking based on the algorithm of the things I like, what they think I would be interested in. I don't know why I had this idea that the show is cynical. Like, I had, like, I don't know why I thought, like, oh, that's probably like a cynical show, but it doesn't sound that way when you're describing it.
They deal with some heady, like, some heavy stuff. They do. Like, one of the characters' moms, who's a drug addict, comes back into her life in the show, and, you know, she's forced into, like, she's been living kind of, like, on her own for a while, but she's forced into, like, a very adult situation as a result of that, like, having to make really, really tough decisions. There's a lot of stuff. And also, as far as representation, it's, like, a really diverse cast. And
is there anyone in the cast that is known for anything else?
I mean, Asa Butterfield is the star, and Gillian Anderson. From X-Files. She's the mom.
The mom?
So Asa Butterfield is the kid. Like, he's been in child. He was in Hugo, I think. He was the star of Hugo.
Oh, yeah.
He's
right.
Really good. He reminds me so much of Richard E. Grant. Like, a young Richard E. Grant. I don't know. Okay. He really has, like, a Richard E. Grant vibe to him, which I love. So I really like him a lot. I love the show. I really do. I love it. I think it's great.
To be completely honest with you, I'm at a point lately where I feel overwhelmed by content.
Oh, sure.
I try to consume as much as I can for the show, but I feel like the list of shows that I'm supposed to have watched just keeps growing and growing and growing. And I'm sure, like, you're telling me it's a really good show, and I'm sure you're 100% right. But the person who yesterday gave me a TED talk on why I should watch Umbrella Academy is probably also right.
And the other, I've seen both. Umbrella Academy is fun. Right. It doesn't reach the, like, depths of this show, but it's, like, a fun watch.
Right. But you get what I mean.
I get what you mean.
Like, you know, people will be like, oh, no, you have to watch this. And it's like, I bet you're right. Yeah. I bet you're totally right.
You have to pick what you want and, like, what's grabbing you, you know? I'm not, like, one of those that's going to make you feel bad about not watching it. So, I mean, do it at your leisure or don't. But this is a very bingeable series. It's only 8 episodes, I think, per season. So it's pretty short. They are about an hour per episode. Okay. Though. So they get into.
See that?
They get into it.
That intimidates me.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, with a kid, we really only watch shows at night.
Okay.
So we can only do.
So they've got to be sexy?
They've got to be very, very sexy. So we really only do, like, one episode per night.
Okay.
So it would take us, like, a little over a week to get through it.
Maybe the binge thing is what bothers me, because I feel like I'm expected to do it all very quickly. I don't know. And then I feel like I do this thing where, as a way of being rebellious to I don't know who, I'll just not watch any of it and watch some bullshit that I want to watch.
Seen, like, or do you do the thing where you've, like, seen something 100 times and you're just like, I'm gonna put it on? Anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
You don't know. I don't watch Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But you don't know how many Game of Thrones conversations I've crowbarred myself into just to be like, yeah, guys, but what about
season 2 of Married with Children? Have you seen that?
No, I'll be like, what about Dark Crystal? Am I right? It's just like Game of Thrones.
I haven't watched any of that. Like, that's something I'm,
that's
like,
that's the puppet show?
Sex Education is, I would say, not as intimidating to me as something like Dark Crystal, where I have to, like, super pay attention to all the characters and, like, the lore of the show. Like, I don't want to miss the background. I, like, want to be able to understand it. Like, that's why I haven't gotten into Watchmen, even though I've heard fantastic things.
There you go.
Because it's just, like, it's so
Westworld.
Dense. It's, like, there's so much stuff that, like, I don't have. Yeah. Like, at the end of the day, and I'm sure, you know, like, coming home from a long day at work, you feel the same way. I don't have the mental capacity to handle something like that, like a college course that's being thrown at me. Like, I'm sorry, I just don't. Like, I get it now.
Yeah.
Like, I understand primetime like sitcoms. Like, I get you just want to like hear a laugh track and like stupid. Turn your brain off and right. just do it. That's actually why I enjoyed The Mandalorian so much. And I remember texting you like 3 or 4 episodes in and be like, okay, what is this show? And then when I began to appreciate it for what it was, I really loved it. Mm. Where it's very old school kind of show where it's like, even though it's Star Wars and even though it is telling a cool story, it's not like I can't idly scroll on my phone while it's on. I can't I have to super pay attention to every detail. Like it's easy watching. It's really easy watching. And I love that about it.
I was actually just about to ask you what your personal rule is for looking at your phone during viewing something.
Depends. So like for instance, you know, I was a big Game of Thrones fan. So Game of Thrones was one where I would like rarely look at my phone. You know, it's one of those like I need to also, especially in the beginning of Game of Thrones, which is why I also think Game of Thrones is like one of those shows that's like inaccessible in the beginning. It's so much exposition in the beginning. And if you're not paying attention,
it's like you don't want me to watch, guys.
It's so easily lost.
Yeah.
Like I remember I tried to watch it when the first season came out. I ended up watching it like 2 or 3 times, I think, because I was just doing stuff. Like I'd put it on and then I'd like do laundry or like I'd do something else and like walk away and I'd come back and have no freaking clue what was going on.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I'm going to try it again, but like I really have to watch it this time. And then I ended up falling asleep. So I have to try it again. Yeah. So it's one of those shows where you like really have to pay attention. And I think that's why it became one of those shows that I put my phone away for. Yeah. But I don't know. I would say unless it's something new, like brand new that I'm consuming for the first time, and it's something that I'm like really into, then I'm probably going to be on my phone at some point. Because also that's like my turn off time. Like if I'm watching TV, it's like my kid is probably asleep and doesn't need me. So I'm just going to like, I just want my brain to float away. Okay.
So, you know, but sometimes I feel like I'm addicted to my phone, as I'm sure a lot of people are. There are times where I'm enjoying a show and then I find myself on my phone and I'm like, why am I on my phone?
Because it
why am I looking for something?
Pleasure centers as like an addiction to gambling and I think heroin. The gambling thing makes sense to me because it's like every time you turn on your phone, it's like a slot machine. It's like, what am I going to get?
What are you going to give me?
Like, what are you going to give me this time? Is it a message? Is it an email? Is it like some news story? Is it some like brand new thing on the internet that I haven't seen yet? It's like, could be nothing. Could be something great. You know, so it's always like a slot machine, your phone.
But it's like, why am I looking through Instagram for an interesting picture when I'm watching a movie I like?
I know, but that's the nature of addiction, right? It's like, why am I doing this thing? It's not good for me or my brain right now.
Yeah. And a couple episodes ago, me and Anthony were talking about books that changed our lives. Mm-hmm. And I think my phone probably is the one impediment keeping me from reading.
I agree. I remember listening to that and being like, oh, yeah. For sure.
I read better when I leave my phone elsewhere.
Yeah.
Because I'll even be into a book, like, you know, like reading 5 pages or whatever, and then, like, it lights up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, what's it going to be? And then, like, you say, I'm just going to pick it up and read the text or whatever, but then, like, you don't. You go to the next thing.
And you just keep going. And then it's like an hour. Like, where did that time just go?
Like, Jen really loves TikTok. And she's like, but I'll only look at TikTok on her phone because if I get it on my phone, it's going to be the end of me.
Yeah. I don't like TikTok. I loved Vine.
I feel like TikTok is so Viney, though.
It isn't. I don't know. If you like really loved Vine, then you're like, oh, TikTok's kind of like this other thing. Because it's like a generation apart.
Right? Yeah, sure.
So it's like a whole new set of kids and like what they think is funny.
But I feel like, yes, that's true. But the film major in me feels like it all goes back to the earliest films.
It is an art form to be able to make something funny, execute a joke in a very, very short period of time. Yeah, that's kind of why I love the Vine so much.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is like, you don't know why it's funny, so why it's tickling you in that way. It's like so bizarre. I love it.
When did editors figure out that somehow you can get a bigger laugh when you don't finish the sound? You know what I mean? Like someone begins to scream and then it's over.
It's over. Yeah, it's over. Because like, your mind is finishing it.
Yeah.
It
just gets you.
Yeah.
And also the peaks and valleys of that. Like a dog. You know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking of all the vines with that guy and his dog where the dog would go crazy and like bite at him. And he was like afraid of his dog. But
was
he
it
would
Mr.
still,
Bubs?
I think
I love
so.
Mr. Bubs so much. And like, I love just, you, Mr. Bubs.
And the dog would go nuts. And with him screaming.
I love that one.
Well, yeah, like all Jen looks at are like dog TikToks.
That's cute.
There are so, but it's what's interesting is like the creativity of it and the meme of it, because it's like somebody will do something and then other people will do it as well. But it's like,
yeah, and they do put their own spin on it. Right. Or, yeah.
Like one I really like is Lizzo, but like you show a bunch of dogs. So when she's like, I like big boys, I like little boys, I like fancy boys, like you just show a bunch of different really dogs. Cute. And it's like, how many, and then, you know, like any meme, and eventually it'll turn and it'll be something different. And, but I don't want to download it because if I have TikTok, then it's just another thing.
Well, okay. That horrifying video that you sent me.
Oh, what the fuck is it called?
Oh.
That was actually shown to me by someone I work with who's super young. She's like 21.
Because it's popular on TikTok.
Right, that's right.
And I looked it up after you sent it to me and I was like, kids are making videos of this on TikTok. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, so what was it called?
The creator, I don't remember now.
Something Michigan.
Oh, perhaps in Michigan? I think it's perhaps.
Yeah, it was a short film from the 80s.
The creator was informed by somebody that kids are making TikToks of this. Like,
because it's a musical, the short.
It's like, oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no, no, no. And that's what the kids are doing. Some of them are genuinely spooky and like, I watched a few of them. I thought they were cool.
Yeah. So that's probably where the person at my job
saw it. Most likely. So weird what like.
See, I haven't seen the TikToks. It's called Possibly in Michigan.
Possibly in Michigan? Okay.
From 1983. I haven't seen the TikToks. I've now watched the actual film, which is like it's a video.
It is a fever dream. It is a nightmare, a waking nightmare.
It's a musical in the sense that everything is sort of sing-songy.
Yeah.
And it's there's an opera, a cannibal really. In it. Yeah.
Arthur the Cannibal. It's like this horrific mask.
Yeah.
It looks like the guy from Pete and Pete. What's that?
He's got a suit on.
Yeah, he's got a tuxedo, but he's got this really awful rubber mask that's scary and I hate it.
It's 12 minutes long.
Yeah.
It's got that video quality of somehow being like acoustic and synthetic at the same time.
The comments on the YouTube video are incredible.
Oh yeah, you were telling
me. Somebody was like, this whole thing has the feeling of like when you tilt your chair back too far.
Oh my God.
Somebody was like, is this a Lana Del Rey video? It's so good. It will give you nightmares. I really don't recommend it.
I do recommend it.
I mean, I kind of do.
Possibly it's in Michigan. Horror.
You know what's
funny? But it's also like, but it's progressive.
It is progressive.
Because they end up eating the cannibal.
Yeah, yeah. They get him. And he's a serial killer. Because at one point she sings like, and how many were there before me? It's like six. And so she's like, so then I'll be seven. And so you think it's going in one direction because you see her like either asleep or dead, like with flowers around her. So you're like, oh, she's going to die. Like this is a foregone conclusion.
Right.
But then she doesn't. Right. Her friend like comes and saves her.
It's written and directed by Cecilia Condit.
Mm-hmm.
But the opening of it is in an empty mall, which is 80s and terrifying and also uncanny because a mall is a public place that shouldn't be empty.
Yeah.
And he's stalking them, but like he's not really hiding. He's in the background.
Yeah, he's
kind of
in
plain view
almost every shot, right? And like getting closer to them, and it's really, really
scary.
It
seems like the kind of stuff that very much like influenced like Tim and Eric.
Okay.
Like that sort of video art of the 80s and stuff. Mm. Yeah, it's. But I haven't seen any of the TikToks of it. But TikTok has given this woman who now is a film professor, because what else was she going to do?
Right.
Has given her a new lease on.
She thinks it's really cool, apparently, and I would too.
Why not? I mean, it's it's creativity. It's you know, you're taking this crazy thing, and it was.
This is one of them, and then there were a couple of other like these two, and then the one I saw that I thought was really cool. Yeah, let's see.
Oh no! 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 Silly!
No, no.
To try it!
No! No!
It exploded, and they were both found dead.
Like, that's it.
I love it.
So creepy.
That's amazing. Imagine you were a student, and your film professor was like, you know that TikTok video you all love?
So it's the same clip. They all make it of that clip.
But isn't
and
that
one
what
of
TikTok
them is like,
began
is
as?
Homophobia cool? And then it's like, oh, no. Which is kind of fun.
So you like TikTok?
I don't.
No, you don't?
No, not that I don't
do
like
it. Do you have
it? I don't have it. I did the thing that I used to do with Vines, which is like, I'll get like a compilation on YouTube or something, and then I'm like, oh, I don't really get it.
I don't really get it.
I think I'm just old now. Oh, well.
What's funny, the first time I ever even heard of TikTok, it was like 4 years ago.
Mm.
And I ran into my boss at the time and his daughter, who's like seven.
Yeah.
And she was into it. And she, and like that was when it was purely just like, you're lip syncing songs, like yeah. like all well, of this new
a lot
creativity
of TikTok is lip syncing,
and it's like this kid was into it before yeah. I even. And the kid's father, by the way, was like a kind of a published like media scholar who was like, I don't know what this is that she's into.
What your kids end up being into, they're always a cutting edge. They're ahead of you. Incidentally, Henry's really into the Mickey Mouse Club right now. So
is he?
Oh yeah.
Where is the Mickey Mouse Club?
The Mickey Mouse Clubhouse is on Disney Plus.
Oh, that's like the
this is the kid one.
It's like 3D animation.
Yeah, it's over. It's been over for a few years. I think it ended in like 2016 or something. But it's cute. It's good for babies. Well, it's not good for babies, but whatever. You know what's weird about it though?
What?
They'll do throwbacks to like the original Mickey Mouse Clubhouse that no one's gonna get,
right?
And, but like I'll catch it and be like, oh, that's interesting. Or they had like a party. And they all had party hats. Mm. And so, you know, they look like a regular, like, conical party hat. But Mickey's was the Fantasia hat. It was, like, it was just decorated like the Fantasia hat. They never talk about it, but I was
that's
like,
fun.
I know.
It's for the parents.
True stands know.
Real ones know. Mm. Real ones know. I don't want to get into Disney again, but I recently watched, I read Disney's Land, this book. It was like a 500-page book of like the creation of Disneyland and like everything in it and like the crazy shit and like the president of Disneyland was like kind of a gangster who was like fucking stealing, like doing crazy shit, like, oh, you want us to sell fucking your kind of pretzels in this park? Well, give me a little taste on top and don't tell Walt Disney about it. Like that shit was happening.
Oh my god.
And his name was Woody. Two of the people that helped create Disneyland were Buzz and Woody, which and they were partners.
Oh,
and
wow.
That has to be what they were named after. Anyway, so in the book they talk about
although Buzz Aldrin, too, is like a big influence.
Oh, because he's a spaceman.
And Buzz Aldrin was on that show, too.
I walked on you. So there was a disastrous live show when the first day of Disneyland called Dateline Disneyland, and it was hot mess. Like the actual opening first day of Disneyland was a mess. Nothing worked. There was a gas leak. People almost died. Shit didn't work. Like just literally every single thing went wrong. Mm. There were no water fountains. Like the press just it was just they were bootlegging tickets, and then someone even like put a big ladder towards the back and people just like walking in. It was just like it was just insane. But like the live show, you can see the chaos, and it's just like you can see like the like there's a scene where Disney starts talking. And they're like, somebody clearly is like, stops. And he's like, what? I thought you gave me the signal. And it's like, it's just, it's so like real live TV. It's
oh
it just,
my God.
Just Dateline Disneyland. It is, it's insane. It's crazy.
I love that stuff. Why didn't they have a soft opening?
I know.
I guess the concept of soft openings probably came about after these things occurred.
Yeah, probably.
These disastrous events.
Well, like even now when something opens, it fails. Like you, I keep reading about like how Rise of Resistance fucking breaks down every 2 minutes.
Oh, does it? Oh man,
rides are weird. Anyway,
I read a couple comics in the last week.
Comics,
yeah. I read a comic series. It's like I hope they continue it, but it just seems to be a 4-part series so far called Count Crowley.
Count Crowley.
It's a cool concept. So it's by David Desmalchian. Who is not a known comic writer because you probably know him from acting. He's a character actor. He's got a really recognizable face. He's always plays like an insane person.
Mm.
He's in The Dark Knight. He's like the Joker henchman who's like totally nuts and is like laughing nervously and like crying.
I don't remember.
I'm gonna get a picture of him. He's also, I don't know if you've seen the movie Prisoners.
No, I haven't.
Okay. He's also in that as another crazy person. I feel like he's got a pretty recognizable face. Like if you've seen him.
Oh yeah, that guy.
Yeah. So he wrote this comic and he collaborated with artists and illustrators and you know colorists and stuff.
That guy looks like if David Lynch can design a face.
Yeah, he would do that. He also has like a real Tim Burton vibe to it. Yeah. Like those big eyes.
Like it's weird to like call a haunted person's face gothic.
He does have a gothic face for sure. So they
like when he was born, they were like, this child is so Victorian looking.
It's like 1983.
He's like always in those round collars with like a little tie, like a little bow tie. So like he's the boy from The Boy. Like the horror movie. That's what he looks like. So he wrote this comic series, and I hope it continues. I really like it. It's set in the 80s. It's about this brother and sister who run a local news station in, I want to say, Missouri or something. And I'm really fascinated by like local, not even news stations, just like local TV channels, like like news stations that are like run by people who are just like a part of the town and have done it like from the beginning, and like it's like kind of like a family run business. Like
you know
Jonathan Van Ness from Queer Eye?
Yeah.
His family runs his family runs the newspaper in like the town that he grew up in, just because it's like what his like ancestors in the town did. So like it's just the local paper, and like it's like his family business. Like that's what they do.
Somebody way back was rich enough to own a printing press.
Right. Like, and one thing.
Now I'm in charge of what everyone reads.
Right. And it's always funny to me because these people aren't like, you know, William Randolph Hearst. They're not like doing super great, but they just run this this media outlet. So it's a family run TV station. She's an alcoholic. She's like struggling with alcoholism like throughout the entire series, and she ends up losing her job as a like a newscaster, like being on air. But her brother runs the network, and he's like, I can't see you homeless or without a job. So, you know what? Why don't you fill in for their Friday night horror show? It's kind of like Elvira-esque, but it's like this guy hosts it usually, Count Crowley. But he hasn't shown up for work in the past couple of weeks. So she takes over and like does like vampire makeup or whatever. And she's drunk on air, but she like insults everybody. And she's really good. Like she's funny. And she's being like a total asshole, but apparently the switchboards are lighting up and people love her or hate her, but like it's more attention than the show's received for a while. And she's basically just introducing like B horror movies. And so he's like, well, you got the job, you can stay and do it. And on her way out of the studio, this guy approaches her in the parking lot and he's like, are you Crowley? I have to find Count Crowley. And she's like, I'm just moonlighting in this role. Like, I'm not the person you're looking for. And he's like, tell him I'm sorry. And then turns into a werewolf in front of her. And she's like, ah. And that's how it ends. Like, that's how the first issue ends. And so I ended up reading the whole thing in the last week. But Bill and I were talking about it and he's like, that's really cool. Is it like this crazy person who is truly a werewolf who just thinks Count Crowley is real and so is like coming to them for help? Like, are they involved in actual like occult things behind the scenes? So it's just like a fun premise of this like B horror movie host that ends up getting involved in like actual like real supernatural stuff.
Isn't that that's so like in the zeitgeist of current media culture. Like everyone has a podcast, like this podcast. like the idea of like you're a maker and you're in some way a connoisseur, but then like somehow it's real. I mean, that it also kind of goes back to Fright Night.
Yeah.
Fright Night was a lot like that.
Yeah. Right. Like they're obsessed with this thing and then they encounter it for real.
Right.
I really liked it. I thought it was cool.
All right. Let's take a break and we'll come back with Obsessions. We're back. This is PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm here with Janine Gagliardi. This is a podcast that is available wherever podcasts are found. You know where you get your other podcasts. We're there too.
Look for us.
Yeah.
We can't plug radio.com enough.
No. We're not behind a paywall. This shit's for free.
You can access all the old episodes.
Every one of them.
Some of the new.
No, all of them. No, all of them. So this is Obsessions. Obsessions. Janine.
Yeah.
What are you currently obsessed with?
I am obsessed with Julio Torres's stand-up special, My Favorite Shapes, available on Sega Genesis. It's available on HBO Go. I guess only? Maybe not HBO On Demand.
It's not HBO On Demand. I could not find it.
I found it on the app, on the HBO Go app. So okay. It's on there. It is the weirdest stand-up I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah. I think I can say that definitively.
Wow.
Yeah, it is. And I'm kind of late to the party because this is last year. I mean, like mid-year, I think he released it. So
I'm not familiar with this comedian.
He is a writer for SNL, and he's also the guy behind another HBO show called...
But does he have any comedy background?
Oh, well, good point. He's written some of my favorite recent...
TikToks?
Like, yes. Like, I guess they only are really translated into digital shorts because they don't really work as, like, sketches. Mm. But he did checks.
I haven't seen that.
You haven't?
No.
It's, like, dramatic check writing is, like, one of
the... Oh, I have seen that.
Yeah.
Yes, I have seen that.
He did that one. He's behind Papyrus.
Okay.
He's behind some, like, of the weird ones. Uh-huh. Like, I just love his comedy. I like his style of comedy. So, this one... I was texting Anthony like as I was watching it for the first time, and I was like, I'm crying. Oh, like, and then I was like, actually, you know what? I'm not really laughing out loud that much. I have to edit myself. I'm not. But I'm delighted by this stand-up.
Delighted.
I'm really delighted by it. So he's in front of a beautiful like pink and purple set.
Okay.
He is seated. He is in front, or he's behind, I should say, a conveyor belt that's between him and the audience. And it's like a looped conveyor belt that's coming out from the set, and then it goes in front of him, and then it loops back into the set. And on the conveyor belt are different shapes, literal shapes, different objects, and he just describes them or he talks about them or he tells like a little anecdote about them. And it's so weird.
Whoa.
And so funny and so delightfully strange.
Is it produced where are the things planned, or is it one of those like improv things where it's like...
No, they're definitely planned.
Okay.
Like, yeah. Because sometimes he has like... So there's also a screen on the stage. So there's a camera that is like a close-up of the items. So like the item will come out in front of him.
Okay.
And then it'll almost be like at a concert. So like you can see the item as he's like manipulating it in his hand, like projected onto the big screen. So that you make sure like you can see everything that he's doing. And then for some of the items, he has like a digital short that he produced.
Oh, okay.
For three of them, because they're voiced by... One is Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Okay.
The other one is Ryan Gosling, and the other one is Emma Stone.
Wow.
And they've done his sketches on SNL. Like, Emma Stone was in one where it was like, Fisher-Price likes to understands, like, not all little boys want dump trucks and, like, Tonkas.
Uh-huh.
It's like, some boys are sensitive. And it's like, so we made wishing wells for sensitive boys. It's just, like, a little boy, like, sadly looking into a wishing well. And, like, Emma Stone plays the mom. And it's just so good. He's very high drama.
Uh-huh.
He's very... preoccupied with childhood. A lot of toys make their way into his comedy. He's got this great bit about the Hunchback of Notre Dame, and I love talking about this because you were just talking about it in last week's episode, and how it's such a bizarre Disney movie because it deals with very intense themes. And so they're like, so he describes the character of like the villain of that movie, and it's like he's a misogynist who ends up like causing...
He looks like Mike Pence.
He kind of does. And it's like he has this song that he performs in the movie where he goes from like adamant lust for this character Esmeralda to misogyny to then like maybe he's gonna have a genocide. And it's like, anyway, this is a McDonald's Happy Meal toy. And it's like takes it out and he's like, sometimes I make him drive in a car.
That's really fun.
It's so ridiculous.
Wow.
Yeah. So his comedy is very strange and delightfully eccentric, and I really, really like it. And I watched it twice that night because it's only an hour. I mean, it's a stand-up special, so they're pretty short anyway. But it's in an hour, and I was at the end of it as Bill was coming home from work. And I was like, you got to see this thing. It's like the weirdest thing I've ever seen. And I just played it for him again.
Wow.
And he was like, huh, at the end of it, which I think is how a lot of people will feel. But then it kind of just stays with you. And I just like can't stop thinking about it. And I love it. And I quote it now, even though it's like this odd little thing.
Uh-huh. Do you watch a lot of stand-up?
I used to watch a lot more stand-up. When HBO On Demand first came out, I used to watch like all the George Carlin specials, like a lot. There was that one, like I feel like it was his first one. I feel like Dane Cook took from it a lot, like where he was like surrounded by the stage. He's like in that blue denim jumpsuit. I love that stand-up. Yes. That's like one of my favorite stand-ups of all time.
Yeah, that's a great one.
I used to love Eddie Izzard's Dressed to Kill.
Yeah,
love that one. Like I probably quote that front to back. A lot of Robin Williams stuff, like just anything that they had on, I would watch.
It's interesting because I feel like now there's a trend of these interesting avant-garde.
He's definitely avant-garde, I would say.
Specials, you know, like there was the Maria Bamford one where she's like in people's living rooms.
Okay.
Or no. That was Tig Notaro.
Oh, I like Tig.
The Mira Bamford one was her doing a stand-up set, but she's in a living room and the only people are her parents.
Okay.
So it's just her parents like not getting it and being like, oh, all right.
Yeah.
But she's like giving her all and like it's an hour.
It's so funny because it's like, you know, she was doing that as a child. So this is not the first stand-up they've watched of hers in that living room.
Yeah.
I love that idea. That's kind of fun.
Did you see John Mulaney's last special?
I did, and I loved it.
I loved it, too.
Yeah. I like John Mulaney's stand-up a lot.
Yeah, I think he's maybe the best currently.
He is up. He really is. He's very good.
I feel like stand-ups are so... it's such a muscle that, like, when you say, like, who's the best stand-up, it's never... You can't say of all time. It's like who's the best like basketball player like right now? Like who, right like, now it's Mulaney, but it won't be next week. Yeah.
Like who's capturing what's happening right now?
Right.
Like the horse in the hospital bit is like maybe the best thing about Donald Trump I've ever heard.
It's a perfect metaphor for our time.
Mm-hmm.
And the futility of it. Because it's like, yeah, we know a horse shouldn't be in the hospital.
Sometimes we don't hear from the horse for a few days. And then we get nervous.
Yeah.
It's like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
They could be doing nothing. They could be destroying everything.
Don't even look at this fucking hospital.
I want you to blow it up.
That's what I thought you'd say, you dumb idiot.
There's some piece in, like, I want to say New York Magazine about, like, why we need the diverse voices in comedy.
Oh, after, yeah.
After, like, some... like piece of shit comedian had like a horrible stand-up special that was like really really bad and like last year maybe, and I can't remember who it was.
Okay.
I wish I could, but and basically that comedian's comeback and like fans of that comedian were basically like, well, people just don't like white male voices in comedy. And the answer to that was, oh really, then look at John Mulaney.
Right
Like he is a white male voice in comedy.
He's also someone he's who's
very
privileged.
Talented and so yeah. Like you have to do better. It's not just that you can say
right.
Like whatever dumb shit crosses your mind, like you have to be you have to be worthwhile to listen to.
Yeah I agree, because I feel like comedy or humor is such an important part of any contemporary sort of cultural moment that you need diversity in all media, but like I feel like you really need it a lot in comedy. You need because it's like humor is such an important tool or an important like survival instinct that it's like what are we all using to like
survive every day.
Survive.
Like
right,
you definitely
exactly.
Sharpened this tool growing up if you were like a subject of bullies.
Right. Yeah.
And I think of like the diverse comics of like the 80s and stuff, like when you're talking about like Eddie Murphy and Margaret Cho and like these voices in comedy that are really important. And it, you know, at the time they were sort of like groundbreaking and the paving the way for these other comics. But we're still not seeing that much infiltration in terms of like mainstream comedy.
No.
With like more diverse voices. So
we do see more, there are more outlets now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm trying to think of what's my favorite special of like of late. It might be Mulaney's last special. Not the one that just came out, the one that was like a Sesame Street one.
Oh, Sack
like,
Lunch Bunch. Did you watch it?
Yes, I did.
I really liked it.
The one before that was an...
was it Kid Gorgeous? Or no, Kid something? The one at Radio City, I think? Yeah. That was great.
The one where he talks about the fucking guy who came to his school and did
Yeah. Oh,
so, God. My obsession...
Street smarts.
Yes. Oh, God. Is Bittenbinder... What's the name?
JJ Bittenbinder?
Yeah.
I also also love that John Mulaney's like a Chicago kid and like could have been in Home Alone. Like, I love that. I love that.
Could have been in Home Alone.
Yeah. I also love his, well, that's not from this special, but like his story about how his mom knows or knew Bill Clinton.
Right, right. There's something that I, one of his like John Mulaney-isms that I find I say a lot is say more right now. What is
he, oh, like when he asks his mom about the ghost.
No, he's like, no she brings it up because he's like, you're visiting your parents, you got nothing to talk about anymore. To talk about.
You don't have any kids yet, yeah. So it's like, what's going on with you?
And then my mom was like, yeah, it was a ghost once, and it's say more right now. I've even seen that as a gif, say more right now. All right, so my current obsession, and I don't know, I feel like it shouldn't count. Well, it's because it's a book that I just started reading. But it's like, you know, when you're on the first couple pages and you're like, this might be one. Yeah, this might be the one.
This might be a good one.
Because I do Kindle a lot. I read a lot of samples.
Okay.
And if a sample grabs me, I then buy it.
Sure.
So
I never do that. I should do that. I don't sample this stuff.
Sometimes I have nights where I just read like 5 samples.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So the book is called Jim Henson, The Biography, mm-hmm. by Brian J. Jones. And I just want to read a little bit from the preface, mm-hmm. because the preface...
You showed me 6 pages.
I cut it down.
All right.
Lies. The preface describes one of my favorite moments ever in Sesame Street.
Okay.
Sesame Street director John Stone, a warm bear of a man with an easy smile, strolled the set, the end of a chewed pencil sticking out of his salt and pepper beard. "Blue sky," he said loudly, a signal that a child was present on set, and a coded reminder that the normal boisterous Muppet performers and their crew should watch their language. There was actually little chance of Jim himself swearing. Normally his epithets were nothing stronger than, "Oh, for heaven's sake." But with the cue that this young co-star, a little girl named Joey, had arrived, Jim slowly unfolded himself and rose to his full 6'1" height. Casually, Jim pulled Kermit onto his right arm, slightly parting his thumb from his fingers as he slid his hand into the frog's mouth, then smoothed the long green sleeve from Kermit's body down over his elbow.
That is
sensual.
Very erotic.
He brought the frog's face up toward his own, tilting the head slightly, and suddenly Kermit was magically alive. Sizing up Jim with his eyes that seemed to widen and narrow as Jim arched or clenched his fingers inside Kermit's head. While Sesame Street's Muppet sets were usually elevated on stilts, some 6 feet off the floor, mm-hmm. making it possible for puppeteers to perform while standing, mm-hmm. no child would ever be placed on such a perilous height. Instead, Joey, in a pink striped shirt with her long blonde hair tied at the top of her head, was moved into position on a stool while Jim knelt next to her. Slowly, he raised Kermit up beside her, eyeing the Muppet's position on a video monitor in front of his crouched knees. Joey's eyes locked immediately on Kermit. The frog was no mere puppet. Kermit was real. "Rolly, olly, olly, oh," called Stone as the tape began to roll. Joey was already patting and petting Kermit lovingly.
Is there anything cuter than a little girl named Joey? I mean,
I know.
Really?
Do you know the clip? Do you recognize this clip?
I don't.
"Hey, can you sing the alphabet, Joey?" asked Kermit. "Yes," said Joey, nodding earnestly. "Yes, I could. Let's hear you sing the alphabet." "A, B, C, D," sang Joey, and Jim bopped Kermit along in time to the familiar Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star melody, bouncing the frog's head back and forth. "E, F," continued Joey. Then instead of G, she substituted Cookie Monster.
Oh, okay. I do know this one.
And giggled at her own joke. All eyes in the studio were on the frog, waiting to see what Jim would do. Jim reacted instantly, arching his long fingers inside Kermit to give him a surprise expression. Then he turned the frog in a classic slow burn towards the still giggling Joey. "You're not singing the alphabet," Kermit said cheerily, and began the song again. Joey sang along eagerly, this time gliding past the letter G without incident and stumbling only slightly through the troublesome quintet of elemental P. Joey patted Kermit lightly, unable to keep her hands off the slightly fuzzy Muppet. "QR Cookie Monster," she sang, and broke down in another fit of giggles. Jim pressed his thumb and fingers tightly together inside Kermit's head, giving the frog a brief look of mock irritation. Then he arched his hand back upward, returning Kermit's expression to one of mild surprise. Joey tilted her head slightly and giggled directly into Kermit's eyes. She believed in him completely. "Cookie Monster isn't a letter of the alphabet," said Kermit helpfully. "It goes Q-R-S-T-U Cookie Monster," Joey exploded into giggles, clenching her hands in front of her. For a moment, Jim nearly broke character. He snickered slightly. "You're just teasing me." he finally said in Kermit's voice. And the two of them began singing together again, W, X, Y, and Z. Joey briefly placed her hand on Kermit's shoulder as they entered the refrain. Now I've sung my ABCs, the two of them sang. Next time Cookie Monster, Joey erupted and broke down in giggling again. Next time Cookie Monster could do it with you, griped Kermit. I'm leaving. Jim pulled Kermit's face into a mild grimace and with a groan of exasperation, sulked the frog away out of camera shot. Joey stared after him. I love you, she said, matter-of-factly. Jim bounced Kermit eagerly back toward the little girl. I love you too, he said warmly. Thanks, said Joey, and she draped an arm around Kermit and kissed him on the head.
I do know this one.
This is
it was also a popular Vine.
Was it?
Yeah, because she would go, QR, Cookie Monster, and then you would just see Kermit the Frog falling off a building.
Himself. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I remember this one.
You can find it easily on YouTube. Mm-hmm. What I like about... First of all, I like the writing of this. I like that the author gives special attention to how he's manipulating Kermit. Mm-hmm. Like, literally what he's doing with his hand to make an expression. But also, I always wondered if that were written or not.
Okay. Like, that she would be doing that?
Yeah, it seems from this...
Well, they're great improvisers.
The Muppets?
Yeah, because they have to be, the performers. Yeah. Because they're working with kids, and kids are unpredictable.
They do
and
say the darndest things.
They're going to say crazy shit.
Yeah. So, little Joey. Aww. She must be in her late 50s at this point.
Wow.
Because she was like a season one character.
And we just lost Big Bird. I almost called him Joyce Carol Oates, but that's not...
That's not that. Him.
Carol Spinney. Carol Spinney, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aw.
Well, anyway.
He was one of the originals. He was one, like, Jim Henson hired.
Yeah, he's old. He was there for a long time. Yeah. The last couple of years, he wasn't performing it. He was just voicing it.
He was doing the voice, yeah. And I've noticed, because this new season that's on now, that I'm watching with Henry, is the last season he performed the voice. Mm-hmm. And Bill was saying, like, wow, his voice didn't age at all. And it did, kind of. Mm-hmm. Like, the voice is the same. Like, it didn't get husky or anything. Like, you see that a lot with the Simpsons actors.
Yes.
Like, their voices have changed a lot. But it seems like it's wavering.
The patina of time is on it.
It seems thinner somehow.
It's like in Rogue One, the way Darth Vader sounds. Like, it's James Earl Jones for sure.
Yeah, he just sounds
older. But it's definitely an old man. Yeah. He doesn't have that, like, that scary vitality of young Darth Vader. Very cool. All right. Well, I want to really... I have to figure out how I can find the special you talked about. I went on HBO On Demand. It's not there.
Oh, man. You just, like, watch it real quick.
All right. We're just going to watch it. Hold on. This has been PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. Janine.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here once again. We end every episode by quoting the Muppet Animal.
Go bye-bye.